Wow.
Hi, guys. Jennifer Pounds here.
Hello, Jennifer.
Hi, Jen.
Hello. Hi. Good to hear you guys. Okay, a little background noise. So if you got a little static or, you got something going on, you can star 6 to mute. Okay, I'm so excited for today's class. I'm going to give it about another minute or two because many of you are not here just yet. So let's just hang in there for a second. In the meantime, I want to ask you what's been bubbling over and what you've come up with or maybe are challenged with in the last week since our first call, because I really want to be able to address some of your questions as they come up. So let's hear what you've got in terms of questions or celebrations. Yeah. What's your name?
Jamie. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. Good.
How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Good. Thank you so much for the handout. I wasn't sure we were going to get that. And then when you sent it, it was so complete and just very useful. So I really appreciate it. And I guess as a professional speaker, I know there's always a range of what we charge or we uncharge, and it a lot may depend on, you know, whether there's in-kind benefits that might come up. But I hope that you'll be addressing that particular point for this session, because recently I had somebody that I recommended for a job that I could not do, and she is beginning, and so it became really difficult for her to figure out what to charge. And so I hope that you'll cover a range of, you know, maybe newbies and also people that have a lot more experience.
I will. I definitely will. Yep.
A lot.
Thank you. Yeah, and be sure to ask clarifying questions if I don't quite nail it on the head, but I do intend to.
Okay, so thank you. It's always awkward, you know, and anytime people are willing to talk about that point, I just find it so useful, and I'm very appreciative.
Oh, yeah, I'll talk all day long about that. I mean, I do that with my coaching classes. We could talk, for those of you who have been in my coaching classes, that conversation can go on and on. I'm excited about it because you're right. A lot of people don't like to talk about it.
Thank
but I'm
you.
Happy to. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yep.
What else?
Hi, Jennifer. It's Denise. I don't have any questions, but I did want to say as well, thank you for the handout. And also, I just ordered my copy of your O-Shift, and I'm excited to start reading it.
Denise, that's awesome. Thank you. I'm excited for you to read it. I heard it's a pretty good read.
I think so as well.
Thank you. Good. Okay, who else real quick? Did anyone not get the handout or the workbook that I sent? Because we're going to be using that, and you can refer to it today if you're more of a visual learner. And if you don't need it, I mean, there's no loss if you completely disregard that. But I do get that there are visual learners, and I'm glad and happy to be able to make that available to you. But did anyone not receive it? Okay. Well, I'm going to assume whoever is meant to be here is here. So why don't we get started? I know last week we talked about building the speech, and that was a big chunk of information. We also talked about where we're going to speak, like what are potential audiences that we might speak at, what are our ideal audiences, and we spoke about a lot of things. So if there still are questions about the topics we discussed last week, or even if there are questions about things that we didn't discuss or don't get to today, I'm not quite sure what they could be, but you would know because they're your questions. But at the end of today's class, towards the end, I'm going to leave time for open Q&A so that you can get all your questions answered. And please, like Jamie was saying, don't hesitate. Be very frank, be open, be fearless in asking questions because I am quite fearless in answering them. So tap in. All right. So today we're going to talk about a lot of exciting topics. We're going to first look at a continuation of how to market yourself, your speech, and in order to do that, we need to write a good marketable synopsis or summary of our offerings. So we're going to talk about that, and I have a formula there I gave you. We're going to talk about the tools that are necessary for you if you do want to go out and be taken seriously as a speaker, what you want to have, you know, at the ready. And then we're going to talk about fees, how to charge, what to charge, if to charge, and what you might do in place of charging. And I also gave you some useful forms and templates at the end there, which we'll go over each one of them. And my favorite topic is, towards the end, we'll talk about how to promote your coaching before you get on the speaking platform, while you're on the speaking platform, and then after you do your presentation, so that this is not only a possible revenue stream for you, but an opportunity for you to attract the ideal clients into your practice. So we're going to talk about that, and I'm more than happy to hear additional ideas and best practices that you guys have, you know, because, I don't know, I have some ideas, and I'm just one person. So if you guys, I know there's some experienced speakers in here, if you have some other things, please don't hesitate. I'll leave room for that. Okay? And then we'll do an open Q&A. Questions before we begin? Okay. So how do you write a marketable synopsis? So the synopsis is going to be probably one of the most important aspects of your marketing materials, in that sometimes it's the only thing or piece of material that a meeting planner or someone who might hire you or call you in to speak has to really understand whether or not what you speak about is going to be a good fit. So writing a good synopsis is key if you want to get the word out and let people really understand what you're about. So there are several elements, and again, there's no right way of doing this at all. This is just a way, and you can take all of these elements, you can take some of them, you can take none of them. But I will tell you, I gave this little outline to one of my clients, my coaching clients who I'm working with, who is preparing she's doing a 5-week class, and she used this, she turned that synopsis out. It was freaking amazing the way she wrote it, and she said that this system was just really helpful. So I encourage you to at least give it a try, or at least use it as a reference. Some things to consider in the synopsis are an opening statement of fact or something that motivates. That's going to be probably when you think about like a topic sentence of an essay, that's your topic sentence. And it can be either that and or a summary of the problem and the proposed solution that you're going to offer, but in very simple terms and in concise way. So I like to open up a synopsis with either what I'm going to offer and be motivational about it, and or a summary of what that audience or that meeting planner's challenges are and how I plan to solve them. After that, you want to... I'm going to go through these first, and then I'm going to get a couple of examples from you guys. So in addition to that, you want to include benefits. People want to know. They always want to know, you guys, what's in it for me? What's in it for my audience? And you'll learn later when I talk to you about how to book a gig, some of the most important questions you want to ask are of the needs of the audience. Like, what are their biggest needs? What are they most challenged with? What gap needs to be filled? So you want to include, I like in a bulleted fashion, if possible, but it doesn't always come out that way or feel right, what the audience can expect and what they'll take away. Then there's also I think it's important to include the different applications. In other words, the different lengths. And we talked about the accordion, like, yeah, we did talk about that, right, last week? The accordion method, how you'll... Did we talk about that? Yeah. How you can add stories or anecdotes and expand it or bring it down. Because a lot of meeting planners, you might have this one standard synopsis that you're sending out, and some meeting planners are like, oh, I really only have 45 minutes for her. And someone else might say, well, I have like an hour and a half, and you want that person to understand that you're flexible and that you can make it longer or shorter. And again, remember, there can be, they could be very, very long. Like in my client's example, she was doing a 5-week, right? Now she was doing a public seminar. That was something that she was doing publicly, but she also, in her synopsis that she gives to potential meeting planners, she can condense it into a 1 hour, which is good to know. So when you are, writing, you know, about the different options, you want to make sure that you're also including who it might be good for, so that if a meeting planner, you know, has a bunch of, I don't know, stay-at-home moms, you know, because they're trying to find a speaker at their local chapter meeting of stay-at-home mom, I don't know, whatever chapter that might be, you want it to be really clear to the executive who might come across this and say, okay, this is more for someone who is challenged with finding balance in their personal life or in parenting, right? I mean, clearly, you want to note the ideal audience. And then, of course, you always want to make sure it's plastered everywhere how to contact you. Contact you, contact your assistant, whatever it is, how to connect with you by phone. I love putting a phone number. I think it's a really outdated thing that people have stopped using because there's email, but there's nothing better. I've gotten so much feedback from people who call me directly because they want me to speak, and they get me on the phone. And that, there was a time when I went to this automated, like, press 1 to speak to Jennifer's assistant, press 2, to, you know, and I can't tell you how many people told me that they were glad that I got rid of that because they love when they're able to speak directly to me. So a phone number is just a wonderful thing. Plus, if you put the phone number on there and you, on your voicemail, you say something like, hi, this is Jennifer Powers. Sorry, I missed, this is Jennifer Powers, professional coach and speaker. Sorry I missed your call. Please leave your name and number. And then you can say, for more information, please visit my website, jenniferpowers.com, blah, 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 whatever. Then you have this wonderful greeting and an opportunity to reiterate that you are a speaker if in, or a coach or whatever it is, other thing you do. There's nothing wrong with putting your phone number on there. You can always pass on answering the call and let it go to voicemail. Okay. So let's look at this synopsis. I'm thinking there are some pretty astute people in the class, and I'm wondering if we might just on the fly here, or maybe some of you have looked at this over the weekend since I sent it on Friday and had a chance to write some statements up. If not, maybe we can just play a little bit. So who wants to give an example of a statement that encapsulates why your message is important for people to hear? So in other words, that opening statement of fact, or maybe a summary of the problem and proposed solution. What comes up for you?
Hey, Jen, it's Eric. I'll share one.
Okay. Thanks, Eric.
So I was just actually, I spent all day today writing speaking proposals, so this is all very fresh.
Nice.
My opening two sentences in my synopsis are, organizations and cultures must change to win. It's that simple. However, 70% of change initiatives fail to meet or sustain their objectives.
Boom. Problem. Boom. Statement of fact. Boom. Problem. Awesome. Awesome, Eric. Really well done. How does it continue? I'm curious.
The rest of the paragraph is, the discriminating difference between success and failure with process, technology, or culture change comes down to the level and quality of leadership engagement. Yes, leadership engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go on to talk about and so forth, and then the presentation.
Well, hold on. You wanted to talk about how awesome you are at leadership engagement or teaching leadership engagement or sharing best practices. Is that, do you get to that pretty quickly in your synopsis?
Yes.
Okay, because that's what we want to do. What we want to make sure, and that's awesome, Eric, and we want to make sure that we are presenting the statement of fact or the motivating statement and maybe a problem, but we don't want to go too deeply into the problem in our synopsis. That's best saved for an article. What we want to do is make that as concise as possible and then spend most of the rest of the time talking about the solution that you offer or the motivation that you bring or the ideas or best practices or tools. Yeah? So the quicker you can get that to that, the better. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Good. Shazam. Love it. Who else has another example? Okay, so the example that I brought is the role of strong conversational skills in building lasting relationships and strong leaders should not be overlooked. I'm sort of offering a nice way of presenting a problem there that they are often overlooked and that they shouldn't be, and that's part of my philosophy, so it's kind of all of that wrapped into one. And then bringing in another factual statement, coaches are master conversationalists who are trained in the art of active listening, asking powerful questions. So see, I'm already folding in tools that a really sort of a semi-bright reader of this would understand that that's what's going to be highlighted in the talk, or else why would I be bringing it in here? So active listening, asking powerful questions, using language that draws people in. Continuation, knowing how to hone these skills and engaging in masterful coaching conversations creates unlimited growth opportunities for human resources. So there's, now what we have is potential solutions, and notice there's also the ideal audience, right, for human resources, management, sales, employees, or any professional in a leadership role. So notice in like less than, you know, three sentences, you're able to include a lot of information because people are just skimming these. They're not sitting down and, you know, having coffee over it typically. They just want the facts, Jack. So going down into the summary, you want to immediately get into, like I said, not so much facts or too much long-windedness. It's really, what is this program about? The objective is of this program, yada, yada, and then what to expect. So you can call what to expect a audience members can will walk away with, or participants can expect to learn, you know, dot, dot, whatever it is, you can definitely create some wonderful bullets, which, by the way, the eyeball does tend to go directly to, because they are really, really interested in the benefits that they're going to be taking away. So use action, like really good action, like develop. Here we have develop, discover, polish, create. These sort of action words are going to be really helpful. Does anyone already have a set of these that they use or can think of one or two takeaways that the audience and participants will leave with?
Jennifer, it's Denise. I don't, but as you were speaking, I actually jotted down something that, if you don't mind, I would like to read.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Trying to follow the guidelines that you said. Okay.
Okay.
In America, the marriage rate is 6.8 per 1,000 total population, and the divorce rate is 3.6 per 1,000 population. Nearly mm-hmm. one-half of all marriages end in divorce. As a professional life coach and military wife of over 30 years, I understand the challenges that come in marriages. I have developed a hands-on approach to co-creating healthy marriages and relationships.
Excellent. I love that. You had me at over 50% of marriages end in divorce in the United States or something like that. That first part I was a little bit foggy on. Let me just open it up to the class to see what they think, and then I'll have one other comment. What was that first statement again, Denise? What was the first sentence?
It was actually the U.S. Census rate on divorce and marriage. In America, the marriage rate is 6.8 per 1,000 populations, and the divorce rate is 3.6 per 1,000 population.
Okay, so now I got to think a lot. Like, I'm like, okay, so like 6.8.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm like, okay, what? So
I can't start with just nearly one half. I can start with that because I guess it's the same.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, totally. And I don't even have to think about it, right? Like, it's already like, holy cow, that's an epidemic, right? So that's a problem. So, yeah. Let me just see. Does anyone else have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I thought the statistic that's more general, that's not so statistically heavy, if you will, is definitely going to be easier for people to scan and wrap their brain around.
Yes, good. The other thing I'm going to offer up is writing in the first person versus writing in the third person. And I'm not advocating for either one. I'm just saying that there are two options to that. And you guys have a very similar question to answer when you write up your web copy. So it's I offer, or it's Denise offers, or Denise is, you know, the value of the third person is you get to tout your own horn really easily. You know, Denise is the next up and coming expert in, you know, divorce, yada, yada. As opposed to I am the next upcoming, right? I mean, so you can see the value of bringing in the third person. Some people think that's a little too stuffy or a little impersonal. I get it. Just know that there are two options. And start to read other people's copy and see which one, as a reader, you enjoy best. Eric, what do you write in the first or the third, Eric? Does that make sense, Denise? Hold on, sorry. Does that make
it
sense?
It does. Just really quick, okay. So if I use the Denise, could I put Denise with my company is Clear Choice Coaching Solutions, so could I put in the plug of my company name there?
Totally. Any chance you get.
Okay, awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eric, what do you write it in?
Interesting question. Now that I look back on my body of work from today, the answer is it depends. I'm doing both. That's not good.
In the same doc? In the same copy? Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does that read okay?
I probably would read better if I was consistent.
Mm-hmm. Then the good news is you get to look at the whole document and feel out which part reads better to you, right?
Right.
And then maybe make it consistent. I would say consistency is key just because you don't want to confuse the reader and people are just used to hearing one or the other.
Yeah, for the most part I'm writing, I see as I scan this, for the most part I'm writing in first person.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good.
Minor.
Does anyone else have any thoughts on that? Because we might have some marketing copy experts in the class.
Are you generally talking about website now or your correspondence if you send a kit?
Mm-hmm. With correspondence would be fine. I mean, I think.
I always do the correspondence in first person because I just think it's more immediate, and particularly if I already have a relationship with people. If I do send a bio, which is part of what I do send with a proposal, that's often in third person.
Because
it's something they'll probably print or abbreviate or use in however, you know, they want.
Yes. Yes. So now, I'm sorry, who's speaking?
Oh, Jamie.
Jamie, thank you. And that is if we are sending out a kit. So of course, which I don't do a lot of, to be quite frank. I don't send out like a kit of things on a cold sort of, you know, even on a warm. Like I have already spoken to the person.
When you're ready to make a proposal, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would send that out up front.
Okay. And so there's value to that, right? There's value in what you just said in terms of speaking in the first person because, you know, you kind of got a relationship and what's this, why is she talking in the third person? You know, we've got to know each other. So, yeah. That's a good, one of the good compelling reasons to use the first person. I always imagine that the reason this synopsis is going to be important in scenarios that I find myself in is I've spoken to the meeting planner, I've answered the phone, right? We've had a conversation and then he or she might say, okay, I want to bring this back to the board. Or I want to bring this back to the committee or the decision makers or whatever. Can you send me something that is that I can share with them about your talk, 9 out of 10 times they ask that. So for me, it's like, for me, it makes sense to write it in the third person because it's going to be shared and they don't know me and like the I mean, you know, so they're reading it sort of as a third party anyway. So that's why I would use the third person. But again, yeah, if you have a relationship and you're, you know, really just one-on-one with the final decision maker, absolutely, the first person makes sense. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Denise, is that helpful?
Yes, thank you, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, and thank you for jumping in the ring. Anyone else? Want to throw something out there? Okay. If you didn't find a place to put your ideal audience, it's okay in the copy. It's okay at the end to put it somewhere like, this presentation is ideal for human resource professionals, sales, and other internal employees, whatever it is. You can put that at the bottom so people can just scan it, ideal for, blah, blah, blah. Length, just like I have in my example, may be tailored to create 2, 4, or 6 hour workshops and may also be lengthened into a series of sessions that span over, so yours might have perfect length, perfect for a 45 to 90 minute keynote as well as a 2 hour workshop and can be expanded into a 2 hour workshop or whatever it might be. Yeah. And then of course the how to contact you or whoever it is that you are, that is booking you or handling these calls. I'm pretty sure it's you for most of you. Okay, so this is really an ideal, and this is an important piece that you don't want to skip or be stingy on. If you have trouble writing, I encourage you to sit down with someone who does like to write and tell them about the speech or give them the outline or give them your objectives and your goals and for the speech and then tell them that you need help writing it. So whatever it is, make sure it's concise, it's clean, it's of course correct and well written, and you'll make it once and then hopefully you will forever be able to use it. You'll do this for each speech, right, or each presentation or each workshop, and then you'll have it in your artillery, in your toolbox, so that when anyone says, what do you speak on, you say, oh, well, I would love to send you my topics. Or maybe as we get down later and talking about booking a gig, when you guys, through conversation, decide which one would best fit the meeting planner's needs, then you can say, I'm going to send you a synopsis on what I just told you. I'm going to send it so that you have something as reference to share with your team or yada, yada, whatever that is. Okay? All right. Questions about that, about like really nailing the synopsis and having it and writing it and what? What questions do you have?
I just have a question, Jennifer, just kind of on a form factor. Because I'm a visual person. You've broken it down really well with the numbers, eight points to cover. I'm assuming that this just flows in a one sheet or two pages or something that we don't actually number. We may use bullets, as you said, to highlight certain points of whatever we're presenting. But when you use this format, it is essentially, text on a page. Yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would encourage you as a worksheet to complete this information, like complete this worksheet, and then go to your paper and start combining them, right? Like, you get your topic sentence. And then, yeah, so it'll come. Bless you.
Thank you.
It'll come together to look something like the example I gave you right after the coaching conversation. Yeah. Good. Others? Okay. All right. So once we have that done, it was interesting because Jamie brought up an important, I think a word that a lot of speakers, I think, previously put more attention on. Now, I'm not quite sure if a speaker kit is, with the digital world that we live in, is sent out as much, but previously, and those of you who have been speaking for a while will know that you know, you put together like a packet of information, hard copies of information that you send out to potential meeting planners or organizers who are looking for speakers or speakers bureaus that will include a whole bunch of things, and you put it in a fancy envelope and you make it look real pretty and attractive and openable. And then, I don't know, I think half the time they just get tossed, right, if it's a cold call or a cold mailing. So I don't tend to use that a whole bunch. Actually, I've never used that because my speaking is 100% off of referrals. I don't market outbound. So someone else might be using that and doing that, but I'm not able to speak to that here simply because I don't do it. And I don't do it because I can't even stand the thought of it. Actually, that's just not my personality, you know, to be sending out, hey, do you want to hear me speak? It's like, for me, you want to hear me speak because someone told you, hey, you need to hear Jen Powers speak. She's awesome. Or you need to bring her in, right? That's the kind of inquiries I want to get. And they're the kind of inquiries you can get if you want to do it that way. So my point is, if you want to be more of an outbound marketing, you know, sort of speaker, then you'll need to find someone else to support you in that, because I'm not that person. I can tell you how to go out. Can you, the dog lover, can you, star
yeah,
six?
I'm looking
Thank
for
you.
The mute button.
Oh, okay. Thanks. So, so I'm happy to talk to you about how to go out and get, like, initial gigs and get your feet wet and, you know, all that stuff. But when it comes to, like, really creating a marketing plan to canvas, you know, all the associations or whatever, that's not my bag. Okay. So when we think about the tools that you need in your toolbox, you can think of this as a kit. You can think of this as, I like to think of it as a folder on my hard drive that has documents. It's called Documents for Meeting Planners. Anytime I need something that a meeting planner or someone who is of the hiring nature will need to market me to better understand my speeches and whatnot and my offerings, that's the folder. And here is a list of things that I want you guys to take quite seriously if you are going to be taken seriously as a speaker, especially for money. Even as a marketing tool, if you're going to speak, you want to be professional, because even if you're not marketing, you're speaking, you're marketing yourself, and you want to come across as a professional. So, obviously, a list of titles of your speeches and a synopsis of each. So you want to have, maybe if you have two or three different speeches, you go through this process to write two or three different synopses for each of them. I mean, one synopsis for each of them, so you have a compilation of different offerings. I really encourage you, back to Jamie's question, to keep it on one page. You don't need to be long-winded in these synopses, just one page for each. They have a nice title and a similar format for each one, and so you have them in a document. The second thing I cannot emphasize enough is a professional headshot. Keyword, the operative word there is professional. Oh, Mamma Mia. Please don't put a headshot out there if it's not good, right? Like, it can't be a selfie. It can't be something you took against, like, your textured white wall, you know, with the shadow. Like, you know, it's not like you in the park with your dog. I mean, and that's my opinion, okay? Again, you guys, I'm only speaking from experience in knowing what works and some best practices. So, sure, people are doing some casual shots, and sure, it's better to have, quote-unquote, a shot better, you know, than no shot, but if you ask me, there's no better investment than finding a good local photographer that can take a professional headshot of you. There are plenty of them. It'll be an investment of $100-$200, but you just can't go wrong. And you save it, and it's good for 2, 3, 4 years until you change, and depending on what age you are. So your headshot really should be current, because what you don't want, like if you're a guy and your headshot had hair, you know, and now suddenly you don't have any hair because it's 4 or 5 or 10 years later, you got to get an updated headshot because people are going to be confused. And I know that sounds funny, but people are doing that. Speakers are doing that all the time. They're using a headshot from, like, 1982, and they have, like, shoulder pads and, like, really big hair. And so the lady, like, has, like, a short bob and, you know, she's 50 pounds heavier and doesn't look anything like her. So be thoughtful, be smart, be real, and be professional. Go get a headshot. The third piece, and I'm on the toolbox list here, is a well-written biography. And this bio, I think, and Jamie said it earlier, is definitely written in a third person. When I had my biography, when I had to sit down and write a bio, I just couldn't do it. I just didn't have it. I didn't have it in me. I don't have the writing skills. I don't have the ability to see myself in this light and use these words that, you know, that may be very true about me, but because of whatever, certain cultural influences, I'm not able to brag on myself or make myself sound as wonderful as this professional writer that I hired could do for me. And I'll tell you, I think it cost me like $100. This is way back, so it might be more now, but man, oh man, there are professional biography writers out there that will write your professional biographer. If you don't have the funds, I get it, but the minute that you do, you might consider either having them start from scratch, in which they will ask you a bunch of questions about your accomplishments, about your passions, about your current business, etc., or start from where you are. Like, you can send them a bio that you're currently using, and they will spice it up and make it so, so yummy. A really, really good investment. A biography, I put at the end, like, for example, when I'm pitching, let's say, I'm pitching a meeting planner, and she says, oh, yeah, that coaching conversation sounds good, but I really like the sound of Oh Shift, too. Can you send me those? I will put the coaching conversation synopsis on one in a Word doc, and then on the second page of that Word doc, I'll put the Oh Shift synopsis, which looks similar in format. And then at the end, on a third page, I'll put my picture with a bio, and that's just like a nice little package. And then I'll PDF it so the formatting stays good, right? Then I'll title it, you know, I'll name the document Jennifer Powers-Speaker, I don't know, whatever. It depends on what I'm feeling like that day, but something that they'll easily be able to identify. And then I'll send them that. And so when they go into the meeting or they want to, you know, pitch it to the board, they can just print it out. It looks professional. Everything's there, including the bio. They know the who, the what, the when, the where, the why. And I made it easy for them. So your bio can also be used on your website. So it's not just something you'll use for speaking, but also for other forms of marketing and places that people want to know about you. Okay, similar to the biography, in which it gives a little bit of information about, you know, where you've come from and what you do and what you're passionate about, is the introduction. And this, I cannot emphasize the importance of not only having an introduction, but the insistence on it being used the way you request it to be. It's an insistence because the introduction is sort of like, it's like the, you know, my mother always told me you should always keep your front porch swept, you know, because it's kind of like when guests come, you know, it's like the entrance, it's like the very first impression, the impression that they get of their stay at your house or the dinner that they're going to have or whatever, like sweep the front porch, right? So same thing with a speech, like the introduction is the absolute first impression that an audience is going to get of you even before you get on the stage. So why wouldn't you give it super mega care? An introduction is similar to a biography in that it talks all about you, but it's shorter, it's more concise, it's in really simple language because it's not typically read, it's heard, so it's spoken. And so you want it to be easy and easy to understand and follow, impressive, of course, but very concise. The importance of the introduction being used is, how many of you have ever been to a speech where you're like, someone's being introduced and the person who's introducing is neither prepared nor qualified to introduce anyone. And they get up there and they go, oh, wow, okay, so, I'm nervous up here. Hi. So I don't even know what to say about this person. He's awesome, and, well, here's Bob Smith. You're like, what? Oh, my God, you just want to, like, karate chop them to the throat, you know? Like, really? Really? That's all you have? And so it's never, ever safe to leave it up to the devices of the whoever Nimrod is going to be up there introducing you. It is always, always important that you insist on your introduction provided by you, that it be read verbatim. Do you always have to do this? No. Have I forgotten? Yes. Have I regretted forgetting? Yes. But any chance you can, I encourage you, please come prepare with an introduction. Give it to whoever it is. Find out who's going to introduce you. I don't care if it's a big crowd or I don't care if it's six people that are saying. I just did an event, an NSA event, Friday, and there were they were breakouts. So that one had about 18 people in there. I said, "Here's my introduction." I gave it to the guy, and he wasn't even really prepared to introduce me, but I didn't care because I want a proper introduction, and it really laid. It was a nice swept porch, you know, it was clean, everyone kind of settled in, I didn't have to tell them who I was or do any silly self-promotion, it was just a nice clean introduction that he was able to read verbatim. Verbatim is the key word. You want to make sure you say, please don't deviate from this, and you're not a diva if you do this, you're just a smart business person. Please, I ask you that you please have this read, whoever it is reading it. Verbatim without any deviation. It's been carefully written so that it's nice and concise and easy to understand. Thank you so much. That way you're never in any jeopardy of being described as something you're not or not being described at all, which is probably worse.
Jennifer, this is Daria. Yeah. I've been in SHRM conferences where someone's done an intro and mm-hmm. starts fall asleep even before the person gets onto the stage. Is there a rule of thumb about timing on how long this should be? I know you said concise, but does that mm-hmm. mean 3 minutes? Does that mean 30 seconds?
Yeah. So what was the first part you said, Daria? You said, I've been to SHRM events where they
I've been to speak some events where people have been introduced. And they just go on and on and
on.
And it's like a biography.
Thank you. Yeah. Crazy town. They didn't get the memo that people aren't really that interested. So, yeah. You definitely want to keep it. I think 30 to 40 seconds is probably good. It has to be just highlights, right? And a lot of the content really, you want to put the most important stuff like towards the end of that 30 or 40 seconds because most people, they don't tune in really. Like, so if you look at mine, for example, Jennifer Powers is a blah, 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 blah. She has made her life's work to inspire professionals to tap into it. That is like such fluff right there, but I don't care because I know that people are still tuning in, right?
Yeah.
I want them to really hear, she started a coaching practice, we're now serves individual, now I hear 5 continents. Now, I've purposely landed that sentence, ended that sentence on 5 continents, because that's where I really got their attention, right? Because that's quite an impressive piece of information.
Mm-hmm.
And then I dip, right? She has served on the terms, who cares where she served. Okay, good. Now I bring it up again. She's a contributing author of Speaking of Success, blah, blah, blah. I've actually taken that out, so that's no longer in there. Her best-selling book, Oh Shift. So now at the end, when they're really kind of tuned in, I give them best-selling. I give them available, you know, nationwide. I give them those keywords that, okay, they're ready. But notice it hasn't gone on for more than 30 seconds. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, okay. Yes, good one. There's a speaker that said, I can't remember, the longer a person's introduction, the less impressive they actually are. It's really, really interesting, and I think it's true.
Yes,
I intend to concur.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're welcome. Another fun thing to do with the intro, and then I'm going to stop for questions before I continue on with this list, but another fun thing to do with the introduction is, and I didn't include it here, but like for my O-Shift presentation, I get the audience sort of engaged because I'm a very interactive speaker, so I like the person introducing me to already give them that flavor. So at the end, you know, her best-selling book, O-Shift, is available online, bookstores nationwide. So, and then the meeting planner reads, so I ask you, are you ready to figure out what all this shift is about? And then it says on there, elicit a yes from the audience. And then they get, yeah. Are you ready to shift or get off the pot? Yeah. Well, please give a warm welcome to Jennifer Powers, whatever. So it can be a little fun and cheeky, too. It doesn't have to be all serious if that is indeed part of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You can give them like a little sort of prelude to what's to come. Yeah. All right. Questions so far about like the headshot, the biography, the introduction?
Hey, Jen, it's Eric. Just share a comment. I was speaking at a conference of university administrators last year in Louisiana. It was for the community colleges of Louisiana. And when I handed the breakout session host my intro for him to read, when he went to read it, he said to the audience, I've never had anyone give me an intro before, and because Eric did, I'm going to read it.
What it
was just something that simple that made a difference.
Even
in conferences where they're not used to it, it's just another way to make you memorable and that, wow, this dude had an intro.
That's right, which really sets you apart from everyone else because, like, you're professional and you come prepared for that. And it makes him look good. Like, if he hadn't have been so... See, people are like, they get up there, they're like, duh. They, like, say stuff that, oh, my gosh, I could write a book on the dumb things people have said before introducing someone. You can't even believe what comes out of people's mouths, you know? And if he hadn't have said that and he just, like, read the introduction, then he would have looked so smart and so prepared and so professional because no one has to know that he didn't write that intro. So you're really giving them a gift, you know, like making them look super, super good. You know what I mean?
Yep. No doubt.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, and I have had I've had people say, no, I wrote one. I got it. And I go, no, I insist. And they go, no, really, you know, I got this. And I said, you know what, it's just part of my professional presentation that it's really important to me, and I look in the eye, it's really important to me that this be the introduction that's read. Because I've been burnt that many times. And maybe you guys just want to go through, you know what I mean? You don't need this learning curve shortened for you. Maybe you want to go through the whole process of finding out what it's like to have someone, you know, introduce you. That's fine, too. But just know that there's this option available for you. And also make it, notice the font size. I like to make it really big. Because some people, you know, you've had, oh, crap, they'll say, I can't even read this. Where are my glasses? You know, and you're like, oh. So make the font really big. And then make sure you have, like when I put Jennifer's introduction, make sure you put that pretty separate and, like, in a different font and, like, you know, some things. Because some meeting planners will go, Jennifer's introduction. Jennifer Powers is a certified they'll read everything on the page, you know? So do your best to help them out. Okay. So having that, the introduction will be a spin-off, if you will, or a more concise version of the content that you find in your biography. So it's not like you have to sit down and start from scratch. You can pull, you know, you could pull some stuff from your biography. Okay. Testimonials. I like having a good stack of them. And so I still, to this day, 10 years later, I'm still asking for testimonials when I remember. Simply because I've changed as a speaker, right? So what a testimonial was 5 years ago wouldn't be similar now. So I like to keep them fresh. But for the beginning speaker, It's important because you want other people's opinions. I mean, you guys know, I don't need to tell you the importance of testimonials. Just get them and ask for them from people who were just really thrilled with your presentation. Oh, Eric, it was so wonderful. Oh, we haven't had a speaker like this. And like, you were the best speaker we have ever had. Really, Mrs. Johnson, I would love it if you could write that up. Would you mind writing that up in a testimonial? Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, sure. So you request it verbally, then you request it by email. You remind them that you would love to have their testimonial of your speaking skills or the experience that they had hearing you speak so that you can share it with others. Ideally, you get to put their title and the company, so you know the value of that. So, like, you know, when Adidas calls you and you send them a testimonial from a Nike, you know, whatever, meeting planner or executive, they want in on that. Yeah, Adidas doesn't want anything that Nike has. I mean, they want everything that Nike has, and they don't want Nike to have anything that they don't have. So they can sort of, you can almost sell, you know, depending on the testimonial. So, for example, the other day I received a testimonial without asking. It was an email that she had just written to her team, and it was about an event that I spoke at, and it was just glowing. And so I took it out, and I didn't ask her for permission because I didn't put her name. I just didn't feel like it, and I didn't have time. So I just took out that. And there was a guy who was calling me about speaking to his large corporation. And so I took the glowing, whatever, testimonial from her email, posted it in his. I said, I just got back from speaking at yada yada, and they had this to say, and I just, like, you know, in italics, I put it in there, would love to be able to share the same thing with your audience, you know? And so you can throw them in anywhere you want. On your website, of course, you want to include them. If you have brochures or a speaker kit, definitely include them in there. If you have something like a one page where you put a lot of information on one page, testimonials are a good thing to go on there. So definitely start collecting them. I don't care if you spoke for free. Get a testimonial and start now, okay? And then, of course, another bit of information, if you are going to present yourself as a speaker, you want to include it on your web page, and I'm not a website guru, so I'm not about to tell you how to go about that. However, I would recommend you just go to other either coaches or consultants or whoever your peer group is, web pages who do speak, and see how they present that. Like, do they have a whole separate tab for it? Is it just on the side margin? Barbara also speaks, can come speak to your audience about increasing productivity. You know, like, where are they putting it? How does it feel to you? How much spotlight are they giving it? How much real estate? Because I think, for example, I have a speaking tab. People will consider that more of like a revenue stream and a part of my business, as opposed to, you know, if I just mention it at the bottom of my coaching page, Jennifer will also come to your, you know, group to speak, call her today, you know, and then there's not much else information or attention given to it. So depending on where you put it, just so peruse a little bit and see what other people are doing, and what feels right is what I recommend you do. Okay, I want to go to, I'm kind of going to speed up because we've got a lot of information here. I want to go to this form that may be helpful for some of you. Some of you may never use this, but this is a speaker request information form that I created that is really helpful when you get a call or when you even call upon someone to speak for them. If you follow this, like, from the top to the bottom, you're pretty much going to cover all your bases and get the information that you need and ask the right questions to sound professional. And I keep a stack of these in my file folders on my desk so that whenever I get a phone call or I call someone back about a speaking request, I pull one of these out, I fill out the date of initial contact, like when they first emailed or called, what their name is, how to contact them. I'm a paper person, so I do this by paper, but you can do the same thing on your contact management system. Who referred me? Who can I thank? So, like, one of the first things I do when I got on the phone is, hey, Barbara, it's great to hear from you. I look forward to hearing about your event. Who can I thank for referring me? Right? Like, in other words, how did you hear about me? I prefer who can I thank for referring me because I don't want it to sound surprising that she's even heard of me. So I don't say, how did you hear about me? I say, who can I thank for referring me? Their organization, the type of event. So what kind of event are we talking about here? Because, for example, today I get an email that says, oh, we would love for you to come out to Louisiana to speak to our, it was the Coast Guard, blah, blah, blah. What are your fees? I'm like, I don't freaking know what my fees are. I have no idea if I can even fill your needs, right? I don't even know what kind of event it is. I don't know anything. So I have to have a conversation with you, and some of the questions I'm going to ask are here. And from that place, I can let you know whether or not I think it's a good fit, whether or not you think it's a good fit, what topic I'm going to offer to meet your needs, what your needs are, and then maybe we can talk about how much it's going to cost. You know, so it's not something you can just say, oh, I charge this. I prefer to have a conversation to see if it's a good fit, similar to what you would do in coaching or consulting. You'd have a consultation, right? So I treat it the same way in this with the speaker request form. So what kind of event is it? I'm reading from this form. When is it? What's the time? Where is it being held? So I can sort of picture in my mind, you know, is it being held at the local chamber of commerce where, you know, each of those rooms can fill, you know, maximum of 40 people, or is it being held at the convention center, right? So where's the venue? How long is the whole event? Is it 3 days? Is it 2 days? Is it just a one afternoon thing? How much time will I have to present? Is it 45 minutes? Is it a breakout? Is it an hour? Is it 2 hours? How many attendees do they expect? Typically, if this is an annual event, well, how many did they have last year? You want to know. Well, who's going to be in the audience? Tell me a little bit about the breakdown of the audience so you can ask them. They'll usually answer that question, and then you can get more clear. So is it mostly men? Is it mostly women? Like, what will be the breakdown percentage of men versus women? Or, you know, whatever questions you feel are important to better understand the audience makeup. You obviously want to know who's in the audience to see if it's a good fit for your target market, right? Okay, what is the most pressing need? So, like, what do they need most? So you're asking the meeting planner, so tell me, like, what does your audience really need right now? Right now being the operative word there, because, like, corporations are constantly changing and they forever find challenges. So, like, what's the challenge now and what do they need? I also like to ask, what was the last event that wowed them? Like, what was the last speaker or topic that you just got great feedback on? Because, you guys, you really want your meeting planners to be shining stars. Whoever's hiring you, whether it's at the local networking group or at Xerox Corporation, you want them to feel like they are best at what they do. And in order to do that, you want to be set up for success and you want them to really feel like and look like they've done their job well. So what made that? So when you're asking these questions, you're really helping them, you know, to help you. So what was the last event that wowed them? Like, what was that event that people got back to you and said, oh man, that was the best speaker ever? You know, find that out and they'll give you names. Oh, last year we had so-and-so, or last month we had Bob Moore and people loved him because, make a note of that. That's how you learn your audience and how to meet their needs. And then you want to ask them, like, what's the objective? Like, what do they hope to achieve in this event? Like, do they want to motivate? Do they want soft skills? Do they want hard skills? What will be a great takeaway? Similar to what you would ask the coaching client, right? Okay. So once you get all that information, see, you're painting a picture. And you're also oftentimes helping the meeting planner paint the picture, because sometimes they're like, oh, my God, that's a really good question, you know? And so you're sounding professional, you're looking prepared, and then so does he or she. At that point, you can then, from your mind, right, based on the synopses that you've written and the topics that you've chosen to speak on, you can say, well, now that I know a little bit more about your event and your objectives and your audience, what I recommend is I think the O Shift keynote would be perfect, and here's why. Sounds like your team really needs yada yada, motivation, tools, whatever it is, and O Shift is being highly interactive. Right now I'm referring right from my my synopsis. I don't need to make shit up because I'm looking right at my synopsis, right? Or in my mind, I'm looking at it. So it's highly interactive. They're going to walk away with a set of tools that will help them make better decisions and take more control of their reactions and deal with change, right? So I'm using words that we've just spoken about in terms of their needs. And then I say to them, so how does that sound as a fit? And if I've done a good job, the person 9 out of 10 times says, oh, my God, that sounds perfect. Why? Because they know I heard them. They know I asked the right questions. They know I've thought about what I can offer to meet their needs, and I've just told them why it's a good fit. So they're like giddy. They're like, you've already set yourself apart from like 10 out of 10 speakers because you are super uber prepared. Now, at that point, you've gotten a yes from them. Like, yeah, that sounds like perfect. And you're like, great. Shazam. Right there. What's the next question? Anyone? 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 What's next on the list? That's right. Budget. What's your budget? If you are someone who is being paid to speak, you want to ask, before they ask you, you want to ask them, what is your budget? Why do you ask that? Because I don't have time, actually, you guys. I know this sounds crappy, but I don't have time to go into the whole history of my learning and best practices around this. But you just want to be the first one to ask what's your budget if you are indeed taking this speaking fee seriously and you want to make money off of it. What is your budget? They will hem, they will haul. You will resist giving them your quote because there's no reason for you to feel pressure doing that. And you will ask them as much as possible if they could give you a range. And then if they press and press, you can say, well, you know what, well, let me get, what is your fee? Well, what's your fee? How much would it cost? Well, I'm going to get back to you. Now that I have this, what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you a synopsis so that you have something to refer to in terms of the talk. And at that point, I will also share with you my fee. And then this would be public speaking like 2.0, in which I would teach you how to follow up with that. But for now, just it's enough to say, ask them what their budget is, make a note of it because you'll forget. And then if you did quote them something, make a note of that. And then, of course, follow up, follow up, follow up. When can I hear back from you? When is the committee meeting? When can I get this date on the calendar? This sort of thing. Okay? So this is a form that you can use. Again, online or digitally, or I like to keep it manually. I have these going way, way back. I have a folder of them. Once I've completed them or not completed them, did I book them? Did I not book them? Why? Because I want to know, like, when they call again and they go, oh, we'd love to have you back. I'm like, oh, let me go back and look. Let me look at what they were looking for then. Let me look at what I quoted them. What was their budget? I'm informed, right? Okay, enough said. That is the speaker request form. Questions?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Please. Somebody once said to me, and this was pretty recent, that mm-hmm. asking for, and I've done this and it has worked for me, but they suggested that asking somebody for their budget mm-hmm. will never elicit a truly honest answer, and mm-hmm. that it kind of puts you on the defensive. So I'm curious if that's your best strategy and that's what you always use or if you have sort of a plan B.
Yep. I will tell, it's a good question. And I will tell you the reason why I ask what is your budget is I want them to know like straight away that this is a profit center for me and that I'm not doing this for free. Chances, there's a lot of people, you would be surprised if they go, after all that, they go, oh, yeah, we don't have a budget. No. Wait, what? No. So I want to know that right from the beginning. So that's like my way of saying I charge for this, and I charge well, which means you need a budget. So what is your budget, right? So that's my nice way of saying, you know, you got to have money. But it doesn't have to be that way. The other reason I like to say that, and no, you never, ever get an answer. 9 out of 10 times, the answer is, you know, I'm just a messenger. I'm just gathering information. So that's why I need to know, like, what would your fee be? And then I say, you know, and I totally get that. Rarely do you get the answer. Oh, we have between this and that, or we have this. So I might say to them, well, what did you pay? What was the budget for last year? What did you wind up paying the speaker last year at this event, if there was indeed an event? So I will dodge. I will dodge because here's why. I stuck my foot in it so many times by quoting my fee. I left so much money on the table, you know, because you just don't feel confident in that moment. It's just not, it's not a calm moment. Speaking out money is never calm. So I would blurt out a number and it would either be too much because I didn't have time to think about it, or it would be too little. And then they said yes right away. So I either blew it or I undercut myself too many times. So I have found personally, if I can just dodge that and say, I will get back to you with my fee for this, then I have peace, I have centeredness, and I have time to really consider. Because it's going to vary. Is it a nonprofit, or are we talking about Nike? Is it the local networking group, or is it, you know, a large corp or a nonprofit? So there's many ways to skin the cat. My point is, this is just one. But you also have points, yeah. Other questions? I feel like I'm flying. I feel a little bit like a motor mouth, so apologies, but you can get the recording and listen back to a lot of this. Other questions?
Hey, Jan, it's Denise. I do have a quick question. One, I want to say thank you for the intro insight. I kind of pictured a little cheerleader. That's a good segue into the speech. That was really good. Also on the testimonials, I know once you get to the corporate levels, the Nike levels, et cetera, that 9 times out of 10, that the testimonial will be spell checked, grammar checked, et cetera. At a lower level, is it polite to make sure that that testimonial that you're about to print has gone through spell check, or do you have to list it verbatim?
No. You absolutely want to make sure it's correct for their sake and for yours. So you want to correct all spelling and typos. But what you can do, if it's horrific or if there's some like misinformation, you can say, I took the liberty, you can fix it and then send it back to them in the email. I took the liberty to make a few adjustments for accuracy or for space or whatever. Please let me know if the following is okay. And they will normally just say, yes, of course, it's great. But if it's like a typo or a spelling error, you just fix it and move on. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Other questions before we move on? There are a couple other forms there that I gave you. Again, just one way of doing it. I sent you my feedback form, which I don't know why it came out on one page, because I usually do two on a page, so it's like a half page. But these are just some questions you might ask. The beauty of the feedback form, which we'll learn when we talk about the before, during, and after of promoting your coaching, is you have an opportunity there to have them sign up for your phone consultation. And it's also just a great way to get feedback on what's working in your speaking and what's working about you, right? And what people would like to see more of. Yeah. So for me, I'd get fives, and I, of course, as a speaker, all you want is fives, and if there's ever a three, you forget about all the fives, and like the three is all you can see, you know. But I watched, you know, I take tallies and averages, and so I look at content and I look at delivery, and that's why I take those two questions, and I get a tally. And so I was finding that delivery was high, but content was slightly lower. And so I was just able to say, okay, so what about my content can I tweak to make it a little bit better? And so that's when I added, what would make this program even better? Because I needed to know. I mean, I can't guess, right? So audience members will tell you sometimes more than you want to know. They'll tell you. So I'll talk a little bit how to use this in a bit. And then I sent you the professional services agreement. That's just a speaker agreement. It's just a good practice. I was thrilled when I found this, and I've compiled from different sources. But it just includes everything. It makes sure everyone understands what their responsibility is. It gives a cancellation policy because you just don't want to You don't want to mess around without having an agreement of some sort. And I call it an agreement, not a contract. It just sounds a little bit nicer. So definitely have this signed and either faxed back to you or scanned back to you or however you want to handle it with the person you're engaging with. Okay? So in terms of forms, I think that's it. We'll refer back to the feedback form in just a second. But I want to move on to do you charge and how much. So this is a big conversation we can talk like all day long about fees. And so I don't want to discount, first of all, the people in the class who know right out of the gate that this isn't going to be something that they're going to charge for. I totally get that. I honor it. I love it if you're clear on that. I would also, how do I want to say this? I also want to challenge you to not be afraid to charge if indeed there's like a twinge of interest. Because sometimes people are like, no, I don't want to charge because I just want to speak or I just want to market myself or I don't need the money or whatever. But there could be, as a coach I know and many of you know, that they might be little covers for just a fear of putting out a fee for your speaking or maybe feeling like you're not enough or qualified enough to charge a fee. So I encourage you to question yourself what is really behind not wanting to charge, because speaking is a very viable form of income and it's a very legitimate one too. So consider what might be getting in the way of you not wanting to charge. And then if you just realize you're perfectly sane and you're just fine without charging, you're not hiding behind anything, then that's good too. If you're not charging, then you are strictly speaking for the love of it, I guess, or because you are using it as a very powerful marketing tool. And that is wonderful. There's no reason why that can't be your only goal in speaking, as we talked about in last week's class. So if you are marketing, if you are using it and you're not using it as a profit center and you're just strictly marketing, please, please do yourself the favor of making sure that you are speaking to audiences that are chock full of your target audience. Go back to week one, right, and look at that and understand who your ideal audience is and for your coaching or your consulting or whatever professional service you're offering, and make sure that at least a good 60 or 70% of the audience fits that profile. Or else why would you do it? You know, once your feet are wet and once you feel comfortable, why would you speak to an audience that didn't, for free, that didn't contain a large percentage of your target audience? Okay, so if you are using it for marketing, that's fine. Just make sure that you're being smart about it. If you are someone who wants to just speak and just make money off of it, and maybe you want to let the other professional services fall by the wayside, it doesn't matter too much whether or not the people in the audience fit your target market, because you just want to speak. You just want moolah for speaking. So go do that and just make sure your goal is to make sure that your topic is appropriate and is meeting the needs of the audience regardless. So I know speakers who can speak to the retirement home as much as they can speak to furniture salesmen, you know, because they have a speech on change and transition, and both of them are dealing with that in their lives or businesses. So they don't really care who they're enrolling into their practice because they're making a good amount of money speaking about change and transition to various audiences. Does that make sense, you guys?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. The middle road, as I like to say, the middle way, is someone who is both looking to earn money through this and market their services. And I'm wondering if that is you. I'm going to ask you all to come off mute, and I'm going to ask you to do again for me what we did in the first week. I'm going to go through the three different types, and you say your name if you fall under that type, okay? So the first type, if you can star six and come off mute real quick. The first one is marketing only, not interested in charging. Please say your name. And don't be shy. There's nothing wrong with any of these. Second is speaking only, don't really care about marketing, just speaking for profit. Say your name. Okay, so the third, which is what I'm guessing is, it'll be fun to hear your name. So say your name if you are someone who is wants to speak for money. There's going to be two. There's going to be two. Speaking for money and marketing. No, that's it. Speaking for money and marketing. Say your name.
Tim.
Sherry.
Wow, so it's all of you. Okay. That was fun. Good. So then I know I can just speak to that right now. Thank you for clearing that up. Okay, so let's talk about it then. When you are charging, it is important that you stand your ground, first of all. Lots of things I could talk about, so I might be all over the board. But one thing I want you to remember is stand your ground. When I say that, I mean if you've committed to making this a revenue stream for yourself and your part of your livelihood comes from speaking, then there really shouldn't be an exception. Similar to the plumber who comes out whose livelihood is fixing pipes and he doesn't make an exception and one day fixes your pipes for free. That has never happened to me because his plumbing is his livelihood, so he gets paid for it. Yeah. So it is totally up to you whether or not you draw that line, and of course there's going to be exceptions. There's always going to be exceptions because unlike plumbing, which is always paid for, some speakers speak for free. Yeah. And there's going to be a time when you find, I don't know, you just say, I just really want to speak to this audience, or I'm not doing anything better that day, or they have a really compelling story, or they're a nonprofit in need, or I want to get in front of that audience, or I want to practice a speech, or whatever, that you will do it for free. But I'm telling you, for the most part, really, really put your foot down and draw a line in the sand. If you decide that you're going to get money for it, get money for it. Okay. Many speakers in NSA, the National Speakers Association, don't really like to talk about, I think Jamie, you were talking about this, Eric, you and I have talked about this. They don't really like to talk about fees and what they're charging, but I'm going to tell you, there's no not talking about it because it's happening. People are getting paid for speaking and they're getting paid in all ranges. I'm talking anywhere from $75 to a speech all the way up to $15,000 for a speech. The range is, and Clinton gets $25,000, right? I was just at one that, what's his name? The guy with the droopy eye in Hollywood. What's his name? The black guy, tall, awesome actor. Droopy eye, anyone? Oh my gosh. Barbara, thank you. I was at an event there, and I mean, there were rumors that he was $50,000, right? So great. I go to an event where there's 300 people there for a nonprofit, and they have $5,000 budget. I can go to an event that is a company like Xerox, and they have a $10,000 budget. Intel might say they only have $3,000, but at the end of the day, they have $7,500, right? So there's a range. I could go to the local, I did. I just went to a local Vancouver. I really love the girl who called me up to do this event, and they've been asking me to speak there forever, and I just can't not say yes. And so she's like, will you speak? I was like, and she's kind of a speaker too, so she knows. She's like, I can only pay you $150 and a really delicious meal. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, I had to say yes, but like $150, like the first speech I ever did, I remember it was $125. I thought I had died and gone to like speaker heaven. I'm like, they're going to pay me $125 to speak for like 45 minutes. I thought it was like amazing. So here I am like 10 years later speaking for $150 and like really giddy to do it. You know, I was almost hesitant to take the money. I don't know. I felt like, maybe I should have donated or something. But I wasn't not going to take the money. It was so little, you know, I wasn't not going to take it because I drew the line, right? So point is, you get to start wherever you want. So for me, when I started, it was whatever they could pay me, literally whatever they could pay me. So when I asked, what is your budget, whatever their answer was, I said, okay, that was it. You want to pay me because I'm getting my feet wet here and you got money and I'm taking this seriously and charging? Yes, I'll take whatever you have. And it really was sometimes $50. Sometimes it was $500. I remember when I got $1,500 for a keynote, I thought I seriously wet my pants. Like, I couldn't even believe someone was going to pay me $1,500 to speak on stage for 1 hour. That's crazy town, right? So it is, it's kind of like a progression for those of you who have done speaking already. Like, you progress. You start with whatever they have, and then you realize, oh, these feedback forms have a lot of fives on them. Oh, my God, I'm really a kick-ass speaker. My fees just went up, right? Or, oh, my gosh, I don't have as many days in the week as I do speaking requests. My fees just went up, right? Or what happened to me was I go to an event, and I'm speaking for something like $2,500, and I find out my cohort, you know, for the same, like, scenario keynote got $5,000, and I'm like, oh, money on table, you know, like that. Or when my buddy says to me, you know, Jennifer, the only reason someone's not a $7,500 speaker is because they don't say they're a $7,500 speaker. And I'm like, oh, that is so true. You know, it's like, there's so much truth to that statement. You are as valuable as you say you are in this business. And I'll be honest with you, when you get very, very successful, again, this is 2.0 class, when you get very successful, people don't want you if you're under a certain amount because they don't feel like you have the value or bring the value to your audience. So it's almost like this sick mind game, you know, that you have to get through in order to get your fees up there. But for now, your goal is to speak. If your goal is just to get out there and speak, just say yes to whatever budget they have, but definitely ask if there's a budget. Second, if you're already speaking, are you charging enough or are you leaving money on the table? When you're negotiating, are you saying, yes, okay, that's fine, or are you saying, well, my fees are a little bit more than that? So something you can do is you can say, let's say at that speaker request form, you say, what is your budget? And they go, well, you know, I don't know, hem, haw, blah, blah, blah. So what do you charge? What you might say is, this is if you're a more experienced speaker, you might say, well, my fees vary depending on the type of event, the length of the speech, the amount of customization, and location, like how much travel time, right? So you've just, like, injected, like, a whole bunch of really valuable factors that maybe the meeting planner doesn't even take into account, that this is, like, a lot to consider. So the fees vary, but I can tell you that I range upwards to some crazy random figure that you like can almost have to wince before you say it, upwards to $5,000, right? From that place, you can then be safe because you're saying upwards to, right, which means that doesn't mean I don't speak for less than that. It just means that that's the higher end of my fee schedule. And so you listen for the response. You bite your tongue, and then you listen for the response. And if you hear, boof, you know you've really knocked it way out of the park and you're not even on their radar anymore. So you say something like, well, you know, I never like money to get in the way of your audience hearing a good message. So how close to that would you be able to come? And now you're sort of meeting them halfway because you gave them a number, right? And you're being honest. So now, like, let's play here. Then they get to give you a number. And so they might then... And they usually do. They give in, well, you know, we usually don't have anything more than 2,500, you know, blah, blah, blah. Now you're talking, right? So whatever it is that you do, like, extend yourself. If you're already speaking, just put it out there a little bit higher. If you're a $5,000 speaker, then start throwing out 7,500 and go to that next level and see what happens. You might be really, really surprised that you don't get that much pushback. Instead of getting resistance on 5,000 where they say, oh, we only have 3,500, when you start saying 7,500, they go, oh, we only have 6,000. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll take that. right? So push it is what I'm saying. I'm going to stop here because I feel like I'm talking a lot and I want to make sure I'm addressing questions about this. So go.
Hey, Jennifer, it's Denise. I've got a quick 30-second story about speaking. For 30 years, I've predominantly spoken through the pulpit or for church-affiliated women's groups. And so I've never asked for money. It was always normally, you know, donations. And if the churches were really small, it was pretty much expected that you would give the donations back. So that's kind of how I started out in the speaking arena. And then my last job, that was part of what I did. I actually took on all of the training for a staff of 5,000, and I was the predominant person for all the training and developed a lot of training. One program that I found, well, actually it came to me, the person that was over all the training asked me to learn this particular training program and to reteach it to the staff, and I was the subject matter expert for all of the Pacific. Well, I'm doing this training, and I've developed it and tweaked it, and our general, it was a military affiliation, brought in the developers of the program to actually teach it to the staff. Now, I have been doing it free and was the subject matter expert for all of the Pacific. This team came in, and they were paid $75,000 to do the same workshop that I had been doing for free. That taught me to start charge.
Oh my gosh, workshops are exuberant. I mean, that's a great story, and it really shows how much money there is to be made. Was it corporate at the end? Or was it like a business environment?
The job that I have is military, so it's the MedCom, it's a medical company for the Army. That is an insane amount of money in that arena.
Yeah. That is, yeah, there must be, because I don't know that much in corporate. That's really high even for corporate. How long was the workshop?
It was in total 5 days, but that was just for one level. It was broken down where the hierarchy were mandatory to go for the entire 40 hours, and then the mid-level being 3 days, and the lower staff just for an hour. But the material itself was the exact same that I had been presenting.
Right. Yep. It's a great lesson, isn't it? One I'm glad you got. Good, 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 good. Excellent. Thank you. Yeah.
It's Jamie again. One thing I just really appreciate, Jennifer, and I just want to acknowledge you for your sense of humor and your sense of play, because I think it's really important to remember that it's a game. And when we start dealing with money, I mean, it is ridiculous and it's funny. And when we get like so serious and wrapped up around it, it just creates a lot of tension. So I just really appreciate your attitude around it.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you, Jamie.
You're welcome.
It was when I started looking at it that way, it became easier not only for me, but for the meeting planner, because they're super uncomfortable. You can almost feel the tension, you know, you can cut it even over the phone. So I might even say, let's get to that, you know, that dreaded talk, you know, part of the talk about money. I know no one likes to talk about money, but let's lay it out there, Barbara. You know what I mean? And just like lightening it up, and you can almost hear like a sigh of relief. If that's not your personality, I get it, but bring in whatever you can, like you're saying, Jamie, for that levity piece. Yep. Good. Good, good. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Others? Other questions? Maybe you're quoting someone now, or you've gotten an inquiry and you're straddling these. Okay, I wrote here alternative forms of compensation in the outline because there are other ways that aren't necessarily monetary that you can be compensated so that you're still maintaining integrity, what I like to call fee integrity, and getting value for your services. And so different forms of compensation, and there are many, I can't go into all of them here, but just to give you an idea, if you have a product, and not all of you do, but if you do and when you do, that's a really great leverage, really great way to leverage the fee. So you can say, for example, let's say they don't have my fee and they're like a couple thousand short on my fee because they only have X amount of dollars. Well, I might say to them, well, oftentimes what some meeting planners do is they can use funds from another area to purchase books, which are education materials. So if you could purchase the rest of that in books, or at least come closer to it, then that would be a win-win for me and for you, because then you'd get books for everyone in the audience or for your staff or whatever it is, and we can come closer to my fee, right? Notice not, I don't need full fee, but I'm just saying we can get closer. Maybe another form of compensation is, that's not monetary, is you want to write an article for the newsletter that goes out to 150,000, right, people in their organization. So, well, if you can't make my fee, here's what I like to ask for in exchange. In addition to the money that you have, I would like to be an article submitted in your newsletter, and I would love a testimonial. And finally, it would be great if you could give me two names or introductions to two people who you know could pay full fee for my talk. So in other words, like qualified leads. And that's usually really well received. They're just so thrilled to be able to get you for under fee, but also you're getting something of value in exchange. I've negotiated video. I say, do you have a videographer? I remember one place they didn't have the full fee, but I knew that it was Meeting Planners International, and I said to them, I know you have videographers in your group. Can you just video it? Get it professionally videoed, and I'll be tickled pink to have that in exchange for, you know, full fee. So they brought a videographer out who volunteered to do it, and I got a professional video out of it. One group gave me, like, they just went to, like, their treasure chest, and they got, like, they had, like, a ski. Somehow sponsors had given them, like, a ski package. I got a massage. I got, like, a day at the spa. I got a camera, like, a little mini camera. They just had, like, all this stuff that they dug up. I was so excited. the quantity was, like, well over my speaking fee at the time. I remember my fee was $1,500 back then, and I got, like, it was, like, $2,000 worth of stuff. It's wonderful. So there's a lot of different ways you can get value, even, you know, value in return, even if it's not money. Yeah? Does that make sense? Okay. So hopefully that's addressed some of your questions. I know not all, but time is limited here. I want to move on to how do you promote your coaching services. This is kind of like the golden egg, right? This is why you're really all here. So I have had some tried and true techniques and best practices that I'm going to share with you, and I'm also interested in hearing from the group what has worked for you to promote. So I break it down into the before, during, and after. There's always an opportunity to let people know, one, what you do. Okay, so if you're just a speaker, well, you're just a speaker. So the before really is just letting people know that you're available to speak, right, somehow. But if you're out there promoting your speaking service or your professional services outside of speaking, like your coaching or your consulting, then it's really important that you let people know that you're not just a speaker. How do you do that? Before, you have your introduction read verbatim. Obviously, like we talked about before, it's going to say in that introduction that you are a professional, yada, yada, coach, consultant, photographer, whatever it is, and that you do this for your living, right, as well as speaking. So you are an expert in this field, and it's clearly stated in your introduction. That's one of the biggest reasons why you want to have control over that, the introduction being written and read, because you want the audience to be very well informed about who you are and what you offer before they listen to you. Maybe you also write an article, and this is very common, and a lot of meeting planners don't think about it, but in the announcement that goes out, yes, they'll put your bio, like, we're bringing in Jennifer Powers for such and such conference on July 25th, and here's a little bit about her. But maybe in that same newsletter, there's also an article that you write. And in that article, you get to sort of position yourself as an expert in your particular, whatever, specialty or niche. And so there's more information about you via your expertise. Do you know what I mean? So you can say to them, I would love to be able to write an article, to submit an article in your newsletter before the actual event. Yeah, so let's say you're doing a local, I don't know, chamber of commerce or something, and you're gonna do a speech for them or a workshop. You say to the organizer, I would love to have some space to write an article, and they're thrilled to have content. And then what you do is you put your byline. You all know what a byline is. It's at the bottom of every article. It's Jennifer Powers is a professional coach and speaker located in Portland, Oregon. She offers coaching and speaking services to people throughout blah, blah, blah. Contact her at jenniferpowers.com. Yeah? So a little byline. And then finally, just before the event, it's a good idea to mingle and jingle with the audience. There is no better nerve soother than that, because you feel like you practically know them and you're not coming out cold. And you get to, you know, sort of rub shoulders and let them know what you do beyond just speaking. So a lot of the questions are, what are you going to speak about? You know, and then be ready for that. I never like to answer that question. So I say, I'm not sure. I'm going to kind of feel it out when I get up there. I kind of make a joke so that they can just wait and see for themselves. But let people know how warm you are. Get a feeling for your energy off the stage. Let them know that you coach. Let them see that you're a brilliant energy and that you ask great questions, if indeed you are a coach. And it's a really great way to calm nerves, too. So that's before. During, it gets a little bit more, before, during, after, it gets a little bit more intense and a little more rich, right, in prospecting. So during, you always want to use and include in your talk an example, at least one example, of a client success story. So you might drop in there, you know, so here's an example. I'm a coach, and so I'm coaching this guy the other day about why he hasn't made his numbers, you know, and so I'm talking to him, I'm saying, Bob, you know, so like, what is it? What do you think is getting in your way? And I'm telling the story about a conversation I'm having with a coaching client, right? So it's really clear to them that this is what I do. I just said it, and I just showed them. So a story, an anecdote, maybe you read a letter or something that a client, I've seen this done, that a client, here's something I got from my client the other day, and you pull out and you read, you know, my coaching client. So you're including something about that embedded in the story. Another great, great opportunity for coaches is to utilize, showcase your coaching skills on the spot in the talk. I cannot tell you how effective this is. It's effective because if done correctly, it is natural. It's a natural part of the speech. But more importantly, people get a real feeling as you're coaching one person, everyone feels the benefit and everyone's asking themselves those questions that you're asking that one person. And so when you laser coach, and what I mean by laser coach is just you're just asking one or two coaching questions, one question and maybe a follow-up question and maybe then a commitment question. It's real quick. Never do this without permission. You always ask, you know, if you start, maybe you say, raise your hand if you ever had, you know, an issue with yada yada, whatever, some topic you're talking about. And then you get some bobbing heads. You want the person whose eyebrows are up, whose hand shot up with that question, who's kind of got like a little smile, you want to go to that person and say, what's your name? My name's Joanne. Joanne, do you mind if I coach you on that just briefly? Would you want to play? Like, do you want to do this? And they're like 10 times out of 10, yeah, of course. Because they get free coaching and they get attention and it's fun. So you never do it without asking permission. And then you might lay in with a couple, you know, powerful open-ended questions that are food for thought to break through this obstacle that 90% of the audience has. Yeah, very powerful. You can also mention a book or a product that you are promoting or that you're selling. This I like to do very sparingly because if not done correctly, it can be a little bit cheeseball-y. So I've been told, though, that if you're going to do it, have it there with you, you know, like so you can kind of hold it up because it's more like a visual. And I'll talk more about this at the end and the after part. but sometimes mentioning a book or a product. So, for example, in my 90-day program that I offer people to, you know, break through their weight loss challenges, I ask people, what do you, blah, blah, blah. So you're just mentioning it, right? And again, it could be like an anecdote or a story, or you might say, in my 90-day program, which you can find out more about later after the talk, at the back of the room we have information, I work with, right, so you can like quickly, very quickly plug whatever it is, and that's going to help them understand that not only are you a coach and that you help people with this, but that you have a product that's available, okay? And then as it gets even richer in the after the talk, the feedback form is killer, because if you look at the content on the feedback form, it says right there, yes, I'm seriously interested in hiring a coach and would like to schedule a free phone consultation to find out how Jennifer can help me reach my goals. I've just told them and reminded them, if they missed the 6 previous signs that I gave them, that I am a coach and I'm, quote, hireable. You see, and you should only check this box if you are seriously interested in hiring a coach. So my verbiage is very clear, and it's never, ever failed me, because the people really only check the box, not because they want a free time with me, but because they're seriously interested in hiring a coach. So that's a great place to put it in there, and also an opportunity to get them to sign up for your e-zine or newsletter. So the feedback form is a way you can plug it in there. With the feedback forms, what I have found really successful is I hand them out and I say, this has been designed to take less than 12 seconds to complete. Please do so. Make sure you hand them in to whatever, get them up here, put them in the basket, whatever, because I'm going to be raffling off a coaching session, right, to the name that I draw, whatever it is. Now what I've done is I've reminded them that I'm a coach and that coaching with me is very valuable and now winnable, and I've created excitement around it. So I'll be raffling off, sometimes I've done a month, a packaging month, sometimes I've just done a session, whatever. So that's twofold, right? So I get them all incentive to fill out the form, again, incentive to put their name on the form. And so I collect them all. Okay, we're collecting. We're going to draw. Do I have any more feedback forms? And they're rushing to get them in. So I'm getting what I want, and they're seeing to get what they want. But more importantly, I'm creating excitement around the fact that someone in that room is about to be, you know, win a coaching session with me. And I can't tell you, I don't understand it, but I can't tell you how exciting that is for people to think for a second that they're going to have a full, like, hour with the speaker that just got done speaking to them. They're going to have it to themselves. It's very exciting for people, because there's something about the speaking platform that just makes you feel untouchable. You know what I mean? So you're really generating excitement, and you're reminding them that you're a coach. So you pull it out, and guess what happens? Okay, the winner of the coaching session is Mary J. Johnson. Okay, yay. Now Mary is just giddy. She doesn't even give a shit what she won. Just that she won, right? She doesn't care what she won. She's just excited she won. So she's like super excited. She gets red. She jumps up. Yay. And now what? Everyone's like, oh my gosh, I want what Mary Johnson has. She just won. Oh, that would be so awesome to win a session with Jennifer. You know what I mean? So now you've emphasized that you're a coach, and you've created excitement and even a little bit of desire. So that's an exciting opportunity. You also might want to pass around at the very end, you might say, as you all know, maybe they're filling out the feedback form, I am a coach and I love to help people like you break through, yada, yada. Here is, and you hold up a clipboard, here is a sign-up sheet for some time slots for complimentary sample sessions for anyone who's seriously interested in hiring a coach. I'm going to pass this around here. Feel free to sign up. And then what you do is you hand out this clipboard with dates and times that you're available, and that they just fill in their name and their email address so you can contact them and confirm that appointment. I've been a recipient of that method, and by the time I got it, there were no spots left. So it was very effective. I don't do that. I'm not sure why, but I have witnessed it, and it seemed to work well because the guy was a good speaker. The other thing is you can put it at the back of the room, you know, and say if anyone's interested, at the back of the room, there's an opportunity for you to sign up for some complimentary sample sessions or consultations, whatever you're offering. Yep. Okay. At the end, at the very end, when you go home, like way after, then the feedback form is a great opportunity, because if they gave you your email address, you have a golden opportunity to connect with them. So send them an email and thank them, and in that email, remind them. If you'd like to deepen your learning, or if you'd like to get some personal coaching around what I spoke about at the Yada Yada event, please feel free to contact me anytime. I love to offer complimentary sample sessions to people who are seriously interested in hiring a coach, right? So it's a follow-up. That is golden. If you have the time to do that, it is golden, because, again, people just think it's amazing that someone that was up on the stage actually took the time to email them personally or semi-personally, whatever. It's an amazing little effort you can make there. Okay, I'm pausing for questions on this and or additional tips.
Hey, Jennifer, it's Denise. I know that you said that you will mention, like, your books or anything else. Do you ever kind of pimp out your books and kind of have them there, or would you ask in advance, or how would that work?
To sell books?
Yes, to either sell
there?
Them or...
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've done a couple of different things, which all of them I feel have been successful. So, yes, if there is, I always ask if there's a table at the back of the room where I can sell books after. I always take advantage of that. And I have the meeting planner make sure that they're the one that says to the group, Jennifer is available in the back of the room to sell and to sign books. Okay, that's fine. It's because it's better coming from them. Another thing I've done is in my speaking fee, I will include, like, if it's a really large audience and a larger fee, I will include, like, 20 or 25 books. It's sort of a leveraging thing I do. I throw in with the speaking fee 25 books, let's say, and then what I tell them I do is I give them out in the speech. So my speeches are highly interactive, so I interact with the audience a lot, and sometimes they're revealing some pretty intimate things. So I have a stack of books there, which as a visual is really exciting for people. And as soon as I give the first one out, like someone makes a really great comment or asks a great question, I say, what's your name? Oh, Janet, you're brilliant. I want to give you a book. Thank you so much. That was such a great share, or that was such a great question, whatever. Now people know they're there to give out, right? I've also had a sponsor purchase, like it was a very large audience, and they purchased 100 books, and that I was able to give them out any way I wanted to. So I would give, you know, stacks to a table because they, you know, whatever, or individually. So there's a lot of different ways. Or I've also raffled off, instead of a coaching, if I'm pimping out my book and not my coaching at a particular event, I will say, I'm raffling off a copy of my book or whatever. So, yes, and always ask how you can incorporate your products if you have them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions about the before, during, or after? This all made sense? Which one of these are you loving? Like, what would you adopt? Which one of these are you feeling like you want to bring in, or do you already use?
I have a question.
Yeah.
How often do you actually decline to do a job? Do you always try to find a solution to make it work, or do you find that you just have to walk away? And rather than do that, do you refer people to them who might be more appropriate?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. And I like to win. I always try to find something that works. Like, if they have money and it's not, you know, $500, like, if they have, like, money but they can't necessarily make my fee, I will work very hard to make that happen. And it really is, like, I don't want money necessarily to get in the way of me sharing my message, because if I can get in front of an audience, that's more people that know about me, more people that know about my book. So it's kind of crazy for me to, like, oh, I can't do it because you're $1,000 short or something. So I will try to make it work. Having said that, I sometimes blew it, and we will all blow it. I've either quoted too much or I didn't quote enough, and so you just eat it, you know, or you lose the job or whatever. But for me, it's always, if I'm not doing anything on that day and if I have time, there's no reason why I shouldn't fill it with money-making activity, right? But I never let my clients know that or my prospective clients, because what I tell them is I like to maintain fee integrity, and it's not really fair for me to, I tell them, you know, to maintain fee integrity for those people who do pay my fee. You know, I don't want them to ever, God forbid, find out, you know, that they could have paid me this smaller amount. So people understand and they're really excited to work with you, but you just have to get creative and make sure that you feel like it's a win-win. And that's verbiage that I use. You know, like, I'm sure we can find a win-win. And I'll send them back. Go back and talk to the board, see if there's a sponsor that's available or some other fund that you might pull money from, and see if we can at least get close to make this a win-win. You know?
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Jennifer, this is Diana.
Hi.
Hi. With your fees, do you include your travel expenses within the fee, or do you list that as a separate line item?
Right. I always separate them because travel fees can get very expensive and they vary. So, for example, if I was to go out to Wisconsin, it cost me like $500 a couple weeks ago to get to Wisconsin, and she wanted to roll that into the fee. She wanted me to pay my own, and I told her I didn't know what the fees were. I didn't know how much it was going to cost. So I was like, you know, no, it's going to be an addition. That's my fee, and then in addition to. So she had to go back and find like another $1,000, and she did, from another department to be able to meet the travel expenses. So it's what you make of it, but I encourage that whatever you do, you're comfortable with it and that you're not, you know, feeling kind of resentful at the end of the day. Because then there's travel. There's not only airfare if there is, if you're out of the state, but there's also hotel, which you want included, and some speakers include a per diem. I don't do per diem, but, you know, for food and whatnot. But then don't forget there's transfers, too, like to and from the hotel, from the airport. They can rack up, too. If you're local, and I've done this when I do local work in the beginning, I don't do this anymore. I don't know why. I would charge like 50 cents a mile if it was like 3 hours away or something, 2 hours away, or I was driving to the coast or something. I would just include mileage, you know, round trip.
Thank you.
Welcome. Other questions about anything? Now's the time.
Jennifer, this is Daria. You haven't spoken about cancellations and how they work. Can you talk a little bit about your experience or any advice that you can give us about, you know, something that's been on the books for 6 months and, you know, a month before they say, oh, gee, you know, we really need to cancel, and you've booked 2 days for them.
Okay, so one, I've never had a client cancel on me, and that might be because I have a service agreement which talks about the cancellation policy. So if it's canceled by the sponsoring organization, by them, then this is the percentage of fee that's due to me. So they have to pay 75% if they cancel within 30 days of the engagement, right? And 50% if it's 31 to 60 days and so on. I don't know if that's the reason why I've never canceled or whether they're just all legitimate gigs. Now, I have canceled, and to be quite honest with you, I've canceled because I had a shit fest. Like, I was seriously nervous, and I didn't feel prepared to speak to this audience, and I had to cancel because I was just too damn nervous. This is in the beginning, you know, like the first couple years. And so I found someone. I apologized, and I told them. I didn't give them a reason. I didn't lie. But I just told them that I wasn't able to make it and that I found this other speaker that was available on that day and could speak about this topic, and I sent them the synopsis and introduced them by you. And so I was able to cancel, but luckily I didn't have, like, there weren't any, you know, like, penalties or anything. Because I don't even know what that would be. But so I canceled and made a made a deal with someone else, and then they paid them.
So the penalty would have been that you would have gotten bad press because you canceled.
Yeah.
Totally. You know, at a sales meeting or something, and they needed to fill that slot, so that wouldn't have looked good for you. Yeah.
Yep, okay. That would have been a penalty. Yeah. So you do what you can to find a replacement, and if it's with plenty of time that they can get it out to press, you know, it's not like the day before. It was just, a few weeks, and so it was a win-win, but you don't really want to do that. So if they cancel, it's nice to have a little cancellation policy. Now, some speakers, and I'm actually thinking about doing this, I don't take 50% up front, but a lot of speakers require 50% up front on the booking and then the balance after the speech. I take it like net 30. Like I don't, either that day they pay me, if it's a small organization, just hand me a check, or I invoice the department. So you can take 50%, you know, and sort of feel like even if they canceled, that's non-refundable kind of thing.
Right.
But you get to set that.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
Jennifer, this is Troy. You know, right off the bat, last time you talked about as a speaker, number one, don't suck, which makes perfect sense. If, you know, how... this may have never happened to you, but how would you kind of know from, you know, maybe they say a lot of nice things, they don't want you back. How do you get real honest feedback about that?
Well, clearly, Troy, that has never happened to me. No, that has definitely happened to me. That happened to me when I was speaking to a bunch of Oregon Teachers Association. I'm calling them out. They were like the worst freaking audience ever. They were just like a bunch of like fuddy-duddies, and they're so negative, and I felt it, and I was feeding off of it, and it was just the worst speech ever. So here's what you do. You walk away gracefully. You just walk away. But you'll know if you're handing out feedback forms, right? You might not get like ones or twos, but you'll get a lot of threes, because that's like what the most thing people can, like really nice people can gently say, that really wasn't that great, you know? And so that's why it's important to divvy up the questions among, like, was it delivery that wasn't great, or was it content that wasn't great? So you might be a great presenter, but the content was weak or redundant or too much or too little, whatever. So, and vice versa, it could be awesome content, but the delivery was dry. Right, so you want to know like where you fall. So a feedback form is going to be great, and then really asking the person who hired you. I am constantly striving to be better at my craft, and I would love to get your honest feedback. And then ask them open-ended questions. What did you really love about it? And then what would you have liked to? What would have made it better? Like what do you think? Improvement. What improvement do you think it could have? And then that's like a nice open door for them to say, well, you know, there's a bit about blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you can get some good feedback directly from the meeting planner. Other than that, you can get a speech coach to bring, to come. A lot of people do this. They hire a speech coach to come to your talk and like watch it and critique you and give you feedback thereafter. And they will be very honest with you, brutally
right,
honest.
Right.
I literally, to this day, I have it's just like this little icky feeling in my stomach when I think about the person I've done this, that I hired to come see me. She was so hard on me. She hurt me. It hurt. I'll never forget. So if you, it was very helpful, but oh my gosh, it hurt. But it made me better, you know, so that's good.
Yeah.
Jennifer, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
This came up recently, and it has to do with getting paid in other ways besides money. And I understand all of us need to be responsible for our own tax situation and have an accountant, but
I'd never heard of this situation, and I wanted to ask you. She mentioned, and she charges many thousands of dollars for her talks. So she mentioned that one thing she has done in the past is create an invoice that has some sort of statement at the top saying it's an in-kind, for in-kind services. So let's say her fee is $7,000 and they only have $5,000. She would still bill for $7,000, and there would be some list of agreements, like you say, connections to three qualified clients and blah, 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 whatever else. And then she says at the end of the year, she is allowed to write off all or some percentage of the difference between what her, you know, total fee was and what they actually paid her. And I heard of that. It sounded a little bit kind of funky and a little suspicious to me. I think she's very highly ethical, but I'm curious if you have ever heard of anything like that.
She probably has a really creative lawyer, accountant, because I'm pretty sure, and I'm not qualified even to answer this question, but I'm just going to speculate, that the organization has to be a nonprofit in order to write off those donations. But I don't know. The short answer is I don't know. However,
but she writes it off. It's not the organization. In other words,
she
writes the difference between, say, the $7,000 and the $5,000 she actually received. So she writes off the $2,000
as a donation.
Yeah, I guess. In-kind services. So whatever they agree to do to make up for their gap.
Yeah. I think that sounds brilliant, and if it's legitimate, we should all be doing that, because that's really amazing. I just thought that the organization she was, you know, donating it to needed to be a nonprofit. Maybe there's a tax person on the line who can answer that, but I don't know.
Okay, that's my account.
Sounds brilliant.
Yeah.
Time for one more. Time for one more quick question, because we're already really over a minute or two. Any burning questions, you guys?
I have one quick question. You had mentioned a speaker's agreement. Is there any type of places to find those, or samples or examples of how to craft that?
Yeah, I sent you one in the packet.
Oh, I guess.
You have a sample. Uh-huh.
Okay, sorry about that. My printer printed half, so it must be on the half.
Oh, yeah, it's in the latter half.
Okay, great.
Yeah, use it as you see fit and tweak it or toss it. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Good. You guys, super, super, super honor to share this. I've been, like I said in the beginning, dying to share this class and to teach it, and you guys have been just such a wonderful group and a wonderful audience. So thank you. I'm hoping you're taking away lots of motivation and information so that you can really start to use speaking as a tool, not only to market your practice, but to also earn some income. So remember that I'm available. I am a coach, and that I work with lots of people in this capacity, and it would be an honor to hear from you if I could support you in any way as a coach. Thank you. Many, many hugs. I look forward to crossing paths with you on the speaking circuit.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
You're awesome. Bye, guys.
Bye.
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 Bye.